Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
We will begin today in the Lord Mayor's Parlour in Belfast City Hall, where until very, very recently, side by side in similar sized picture portraits with very similar frames, just around about the same amount of gilt on them, and equally prominently displayed, there was a picture of His Royal Highness King Charles III, which still hangs there, and there was a picture of His Excellency Uachtaráin na hÉireann Michael D. Higgins right beside it, which no longer hangs there, is in storage now at the instruction of the new Lord Mayor of Belfast, the DUP's Tracy Kelly. Noel Keegan, you're a little bit disturbed by this when you called us.
Yes, good afternoon to you, Philip, and love the show. I was put out a wee bit because I'm only judging on the last 20 years. There's been great strides, great efforts made by lots of good people, north and south, to get some sort of reconciliation between the two. Now, I travel up and down all the time around the country, and I've been on several times up the north. And there's a major difference between now and 10 or 20 years ago. A massive difference.
What difference now, do you find?
In the old days, when they saw your reg come up from Dublin, and they weren't in any... I suffered erections once, for example, and I was told I was going the wrong way. And the man pointed back.
South.
He said, you want to be going down that way.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but sure, that's back to Dublin. You got it, son. You got it. Now, you wouldn't get that today. Well, at least I'd like to think I didn't. I wouldn't. It may be just bad timing on behalf of the new Lord Mayor. I think the timing is absolutely... it couldn't be worse timing with the way the world is at the moment. Now,
what do you think is the worst thing that could happen here, though, Noel?
It doesn't go back up, and I think it could be a case where they're doing up the parlour in the Lord Mayor's house, and if that's the case, King Charles's picture will be taken down also and reinstalled in it as well. But we know at the end of the work our President Michael D. Higgins is rehung again.
Let me play devil's advocate here for one second.
Okay.
All right? When a politician comes into office and they go into the same space that's been occupied by their predecessor, they have the opportunity to hang on the walls and to put on display in the shelves things which reflect their interests, their background, their prejudices and their passions in life. We know where somebody from the DUP is coming from. We know that they are not going to consider Uachtaráin na hÉireann as their president. Should we not just let them reflect that for the year that they're going to be in the Lord Mayor's seat?
Okay. Now, put the shoe on the other foot. When Prince Charles and Lady and Queen Elizabeth visited here, Dublin, they didn't get a rough time. They didn't get, a hard time of their trip. They enjoyed it very well. And if I remember correctly, Queen Elizabeth spoke orders in her address in the Mansion House.
Well, she did. She did. But the direct comparison, Noel, here would be that we should be hanging portraits of all of the kings and queens of Great Britain inside the walls of Áras an Uachtaráin.
I wouldn't be. I'm sure there won't be people who would be in a hurry to do it, but I can assure you, in the coming days, we wouldn't. That bias would be long gone, and vice versa in the north. In the north of Ireland, it's beautiful. Belfast is a beautiful city, and the trends that have become the last 20 years, you couldn't go up there 20 or 30 years ago without facing havoc from unionist opposition. Thank God, most of it's nearly faded away. Now, this move does nothing nothing to enhance reconciliation, in my opinion. Now, I'm not affiliated to any party, any political party whatsoever. I'm just giving my own opinion. I think it's bad timing with the way the world is at the moment. It doesn't. It only takes a spark. You know that from various wars all over the world. It just takes a spark to reignite.
It does. And you know what? The absolute genius of the Good Friday Agreement was that it managed to find, in very complicated technical legal language, a way for everybody to say, do you know what? This little patch of ground, these six counties, they can be whatever I decide I want them to be. If I want to think of this as somewhere that is part of Great Britain and will reign that way forevermore, well, then that's what it will be. If I want to consider it a part of the island of Ireland, whole and 32 counties, well, then you can believe that as well. It strikes me, though, that on something like this, it only becomes a big deal if we make it a big deal. Let Lord Mayor Tracy Kelly hang whatever pictures she wants for the year.
I totally agree. I just feel the timing was a little bit off. She could have left it for a month or so and then decided to decorate the parlour and then found a way of putting a less viewing space in the new parlour. Yeah.
Suffices to say, I think the pertinent thing here probably is that the reason that the portrait, that particular portrait of King Charles III, is hanging in that space is because it was sent by Buckingham Palace, I think, upon his elevation to the throne, to the then Sinn Féin Lord Mayor, and they said, yeah, okay, well, you know, in the spirit of the Belfast Agreement, we'll put that up in this shared space here.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a good idea, and I could be totally wrong. The lady, the new Lord Mayor may have every intention of putting it back up. We don't know. We'll know in weeks to come. But I wouldn't be losing any sleep over it if she didn't. Understand me?
Well, we probably shouldn't. And then there's one thing that we can all agree on that I'm sure would have absolute cross-party support on both sides of the community is that that room needed some redecorating because, by God, if you looked at the wallpaper in the Lord Mayor's parlour for any length of time, it would give you the worst migraine ever.
Yes, I probably agree. David, it might be understating it. Philip, thank you very much for allowing me to express my view. And I hope I didn't open a can of worms.
But I think what you've done, Noel, is you've come around from the starting point of being worried about this to saying, probably quite correctly, do you know what? Cool heads should prevail here, and let's just not make the summer any hotter, particularly as we are. What is today's date? It's the 3rd of July. Yeah. You know, T minus 9 days and counting to you know what.
Yes, I know, yeah.
All right, well,
thank you very much, Colin. Love this, Philip.
Thank you very much, Noel. Take care of yourself. Let's take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Hi, Anya. How are you?
Good, thanks, Philip. And yourself?
I'm great. I think you've stumbled on a bit of a biggie here. Big as the student fees, perhaps, Anya, but not one that has as yet been signposted by a government minister. But I think you're going to do just that now. Long story short, you have two in university. You're paying an eye-watering sum of money to accommodate them both away from home. But there was a rent tax credit.
Yes, it was introduced in Budget 23, available, say, for the years 22 to 25. So I suppose my concern now is that something that's going to cease or will it continue?
Okay. How much was it worth to you?
Well, say for 2024 there, I had a rebate of €1,815 connection. It is available up to a max of 2,000, say, for married couples, but just based on the amount of rent paid, mine was capped at the €1,815.
So it's a pretty tidy sum of money, absolutely. And how much in rent were you paying in total?
For 2024, for the two, I paid just over 9,000.
Okay, so it brings it down to 7,000. Now, as you say,
It is very, very specific. Well, when we looked at citizensinformation.ie, again, absolutely invaluable website, people. You should refer to it for anything that you're in any doubt about. It is, they are very specific about the duration of this tax credit.
Well, that's what it appears to be, yeah, that it came in and it was available for the years 2022 to 2025. So it's just, I suppose, a concern. Is that something now that will be ceased, or will the budget now, when it comes up, will it kind of continue it? So I suppose if you had some clarification on that, because that compounded with the increase in the fees, you know, would have a massive impact, say, on our household.
Oh, it's a double whammy, absolutely. I mean, there's $2,000 extra there that you have to find for the accommodation because you're not getting a tax credit. And again, it's a question of timing, isn't it? Because you're going to have to put down deposits, send the little darlings off to their accommodation long before any announcement in Budget 2026.
Exactly, yes, yes, yeah.
And you're an accountant, so you've dotted the I's and crossed the T's on this before coming to us, yeah?
Well, I mean, as I said, again, citizens' information, you know, seems specific in relation to the years 2022 to 2025. But, you know, maybe there's something somewhere else that indicates, you know, that it will continue.
Well, we got on to the Department of Finance. Big, long question, which essentially boils down to, is Áine right? And the answer is the rent tax credit was introduced in Finance Act 2022 and sunsets at the end of 2025.
Okay, yes.
So unless you were to manage to pay the entire rent for the academic year stretching up until May 2026 before the end of the year, that's it.
Yeah, that's what it appears to be the case. So I suppose it's just something when, you know, listening to your show there and other shows over the past week about the fees, I just thought, well, you know, this is something that's equally as important and, you know, maybe it needs to be addressed.
What impact does it have on you now in your calculations?
Oh, well, I suppose, you know, if it was available there up to a max of 2,000, again, I don't know when the year commences now in September, what the landlords are going to be charging. I don't really know, you know, yet. So, again, I suppose I'm thinking I won't have the 1,800 back that I had for 2024. So that's, you know, in effect, how it will affect us.
Does that just mean that's 1,800 before tax that you just have to go off and find from somewhere else this year?
Well, I suppose it's something that was available, and I'm just wondering, will it continue to be available?
Because what I have here from the Department of Finance is saying, sorry, you're going to have to make your plans. At the very least, you're going to have to make your plans without knowing what's going to happen in the budget. But if nothing changes, this tax credit's gone.
Yeah, and I suppose it's not only affecting students. I mean, the rent tax credit was available to all renters.
The statement from Finance goes on. The programme for government contains a commitment to progressively increase the rent tax credit. However, in relation to the contents of the upcoming budget, the department cannot comment in advance of the budget on any tax matters that might be the subject of budget decisions. So once again, it would appear that in exactly the same way that a major question mark hangs over what the government is or is not going to do on the registration fees, there's now a major question mark, a €2,000 question mark potentially hanging over
the rent tax credit.
All of which adds up to, you know, per child, a fairly significant amount of money. And you have what? Two. I mean, you're looking at having to find an extra €8,000 to get them through the next academic year.
Yes.
Good Lord, Áine.
So, well, maybe it's something that we can get further clarification on, or
Yeah, well, absolutely, we'll put it out there. If there is a government minister, if there is another backbencher from either of the government parties, indeed, if there's anybody from any of the independents who want to come on and say, are they going to support the government in the withdrawal of these measures? You know what the number is now, folks, 0818715815. So how much longer have they in college on you?
One is just commencing second year come September, and the oldest one is considering he's finished the primary degree and considering a master's.
Okay, so he wouldn't be getting anything anyway because this only applies to undergraduate. Sorry, the tax credit doesn't, but
the registration, yeah, yes, yes. But for the tax credit, it would be more applicable in my case.
Oh, Lord, it's a very expensive time of life, isn't it?
It sure is, Philip.
Okay, Anya, thank you very much for your call. 51551 is the text number. Ruth, hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. I'm fine, thank you.
No good deed should go unpunished is what column I'm putting your story into this afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine.
So what good thing did you try to do?
Well, I tried to volunteer with the Irish Cancer Society for their Can Drive, by which you volunteer twice a month to bring someone for their chemotherapy. Mm. And you pick them up at home, you drive them to the hospital, then when they're ready, you pick them up from the hospital and you drive them home.
And that doesn't sound too onerous, only doing it twice a month.
It's not, no.
But what does it mean to them?
Well, I suppose it just means that they, you know, if they're people who maybe they can't drive because they're having chemo or they don't have anyone who could drive them, it just means they don't have to either get a taxi or go by public transport.
It's a little bit more than that, though, isn't it? I mean, there's a friendly face. Not the taxi drivers are unfriendly, yes. But there's a friendly and supportive face who knows what it is that they're going through.
Yes, yes, that would be true, yes. And the Irish Cancer Society, when I applied, they were great. They interviewed me by phone, and then you do a sort of an information seminar online, and I did that. And then they said, inform your insurer that you're going to do this because most insurance companies just cover it. And then you have to get Garda vetting.
And this is where this story ends up taking a turn. So you went to your insurers and you said, can you indemnify me, please, or indemnify the Irish Cancer Society so that I can participate in the Irish Cancer Society transport service? And your insurer said to you,
no.
Computer says no. Was there any elaboration on no? Why did they say no?
No, they said we don't cover that. And I said, well, I was told that most Irish insurance companies do. And they said, well, we don't. And then I asked to speak to a line manager and was told that wouldn't change the situation.
Okay.
So
this was definitely policy. This was not something that the person on the other end of the call was just making up off the top of their head.
No. And this wasn't just because it was me.
Okay. They had been there before, this insurance company.
Yeah. I have 40 years no claims driving, so I'm a good risk. So
40 years without a claim.
Yeah.
You deserve a little monument built in the middle of your town. Well done. You're a model insurance customer, is what I'm saying. God, you'd think at this stage.
I'm a low risk one anyway. So then I went online to their website and you could make a complaint. So I sent an email outlining what had happened. And I got a phone call about 2 days later from a very nice young man who said he was following it up. And I said, fine. And then on the 2nd of July, which I think was Tuesday this week, or Monday, I'm not sure, I got a further phone call from somebody else in their complaints department, and they said, no, their underwriters would not indemnify me. So I'm now between a rock and a hard place, because I would like to volunteer, but I do need to be insured. And the insurance company said to me that if I moved from them, they wouldn't apply the fine that they apply if you leave them early. But first of all, I don't see why I should move. And second of all, I really do not want to start going through the hoops once again to find an insurer.
What incredible generosity on their part. We can't help you, but we won't fine you.
Yes, yes.
Your insurance company is Outsurance.
Outsurance, that's right, yes.
So did you take this any further?
Well, I got it in writing from them that they won't indemnify me. But after that, I'm not sure where to go. So that's why I rang Lifeline.
Well, well done you. It was exactly the right place to come to. I have the letter. Unfortunately, we do not cover patients being transported under volunteering arrangements, and therefore the client would need to seek insurance elsewhere. The above was explained to you, and an apology for any inconvenience this may cause was issued. Well, what if, hypothetically speaking, you had a close family relative who was a cancer patient?
Exactly.
Would you be allowed? Would you be allowed to transport them in your car if you're insured by Outsurance?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't insured by Outsurance, but my husband, who died 9 years ago, he received cancer treatment for 6 years, and I brought him up and down for chemo voluntarily. I always assumed I was covered.
Well, you weren't insured with Outsurance at that stage, and it seems that everybody else in the market does provide that cover. Yeah. But had you been insured by Outsurance, you would have not been driving undercover.
Apparently. And I mean, if one of my neighbours said to me, oh, you know, I need a lift to the hospital, I'd be the first to say, oh, sure, you know, I'll drop you.
The last line of what they say to you in the letter here, we remain unable to provide you with a letter of indemnity for your volunteering purposes while carrying patients. I mean, we remain unable to provide a letter of indemnity for your rally driving or your off-roading. Fair enough, but we are unable to assist you in trying to do a nice thing for people who really need it at a time of life where this kind of thing can't help.
Well, the thing too is that the Outsurance ad, I think, is very attractive, and it gives the impression that they don't overload you with paperwork and that they are kind to their clients. And indeed, they may be kind to their clients, but they're not very kind to cancer patients.
Well, they're not very kind to Ruth.
No.
Let's put it like that for the moment. Say they're not very kind to Ruth. Did you ask them, what if you were to add in a special Ruth and her cancer patients clause to my policy? How much would that cost? Or was the answer, no, we're just not going to be able to get underwriting for this?
I didn't ask if I could pay more on my policy. No. I feel I've paid quite enough. I have comprehensive insurance because that's what you need if you're going to drive for the Irish Cancer Society. And I have comprehensive insurance, but it's clearly not very comprehensive.
Well, Outsurance would appear to be something of an outlier in this particular area, because we have been on to the Irish Cancer Society to talk to them about their volunteer driver service, which they call the Irish Cancer Society Transport Service. I know there's a number of different names, it's all confusing, but let's just call it the Transport Service. And it seems that pretty much everybody in the Irish insurance market was kind of it was agreed between them and Insurance Ireland that this would be a part of normal cover. And you just unfortunately have chosen to go and be insured by the one company that doesn't do that. But events are moving thick and fast, Ruth, because since all of this started, hot and fast, I should say, Outsurance have been on to us and they say that they are in the process of becoming a signatory to the Irish Cancer Society's volunteer service, and we fully support it as an organisation.
Oh, right. Well, maybe they'll get in touch with me when they do sign.
Well, we'll see, because what they are saying is that their system changes will take effect this week to support this initiative. They have not as yet taken effect. They will take effect, they promise. And we would like to personally manage and promptly resolve the below customer query. Please contact us.
Well, I live in hope. I will live in hope until then.
Well, we'll call it Ruth's Clause when it appears in not just your insurance, but everybody else's insurance policy.
Okay, thank you, Philip.
Yeah. Well, not done yet, because there's more. There's more. The Irish Cancer Society have been on as well. This is actually really all down to you, Ruth, that this is happening. I'm just looking through this. They say all Insurance Ireland members have signed up to the agreement at the time. It just seems that Outsurance didn't. But the Irish Cancer Society say Outsurance is a new entrant to the Irish market. And after this driver, Ruth, made the Irish Cancer Society aware, we reached out to Insurance Ireland, and Insurance Ireland is contacting Outsurance to ask them to sign up to the current agreement. Are you feeling very powerful and very influential right now?
No, I'm just feeling hopeful.
Flex your muscles for us there, Ruth. Give us a roar down the phone, please. You've solved this.
Oh, well, I hope I have. I hope I have, and I hope just even speaking on the radio about being a volunteer driver, maybe other people would think to take it up.
Do you know what? Other people who have taken it up are on the line now and also calling in. Oh, Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
Do you want to welcome Ruth to the ranks of the volunteer drivers, presuming that this actually does all go ahead?
Ruth, you're very welcome to join the 800 drivers throughout Ireland. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
800 of you. That is really rather impressive, Paul.
A lot of us,
What do you get out of it, Paul?
You get a great bit of plenty of satisfaction from feeling you are helping people literally on their journey through their cancer treatments. It's very rewarding. It's no great onerous task, because you only have to do it, well, you can do it as often as you like, but a minimum of twice a month. You take people, as Ruth said, from their home to their place of treatment, and you drive home again, and you wait for them to contact you. You drive in and collect them and bring them home again.
Why did you get involved, Paul?
Well, I retired from financial services, and I said, what can I do that's not too taxing on my brain? And I saw a notice in my parish magazine looking for drivers for the Irish Cancer Society, so I contacted them, small bit of training, and then I started off, and I've been doing it for 10 years now. And I never had an issue with the insurance, just to give Ruth some comfort about that. Obviously, all 800 of us must have be insured, and that's the way it is. But I get a lot of satisfaction out of it, because you feel you've done something really worthwhile for somebody who's going through what's only a bit of a nightmare. It's the best way to describe it. Having been there after I became a driver.
Yeah. I'd imagine that the people that you're driving, particularly if they're receiving chemo, can be absolutely exhausted. It must be comforting to them to be seeing the same friendly face who knows not to talk to them or to read their cues right, and when they're in the mood for a chat and when they're not.
You have it in one, because depending on the person, if you've taken a person several times a month or over 6 months, you get to know them and you can have the banter and the chat. But occasionally you're getting somebody into the car for the first time and they're very hesitant and nervous, and they're nervous about their diagnosis, they're nervous about their treatment. And the comfort we bring is that instead of having to ask your siblings or your children or your neighbours to bring you in, this service is here. It takes away the one less worry about transport. It takes away the cost of parking your car, because you could be going every day for 5 days and quite expensive to park your car and toll bridges and everything else. So we take away one small bit of worry from them. And I find that's probably the most rewarding thing of the lot.
Noel O'Donoghue is another of the 800 who have volunteered to do this. Noel, fair play. Tell me, when did you get involved?
I retired in 2018, so I got involved in 2019, like Paul, having seen it in a local newsletter. So I've been at it since then, and I'm in the middle of a drive. I'm waiting for somebody at the moment, and the very first thing the man who got into my car this morning said, "You have no idea how much we appreciate this service." And that's what you get out of it.
Oh,
that
really?
They are so delighted. The very first thing, he didn't know, obviously. I didn't know I was coming on air.
sound suspiciously set up, doesn't it?
Yes,
somebody somewhere knew.
I only got a call. It's not. And that was the first thing himself. And he had somebody with him that people usually don't. But he did have somebody with him today. And that was the first thing he said.
But you know, well, you know that he must really, really feel that. If in the situation that he is in, where most people could be excused for thinking only about themselves, that he would turn to you and say, "You don't know how much this means to me."
Yeah, it was amazing. The very first, but in fact, that's what all of the people I've ever had, they genuinely do appreciate what you're doing. They really do. And as Paul said, it takes a lot of pressure off people because not, you know, if you've got your partner working, they can't necessarily get all the time off that you would need. You might have young children, you know. So all of these things, and as he said, even the cost, you know. So it's a very, very easy.
Okay. And do you get to pick and choose when it is that you do it, Noel?
I get to pick and choose when I do it. Yes, you go on a portal every day. You look online, and if there's a drive that suits you, so you know the day and you know what hospital you're going to. You don't know who you're getting.
So it is just like being a taxi driver and choosing which pickups you want to take and which don't suit you, which you can't. Ruth, are you mad for roads now? Are you dying to get out there and do this?
Oh, well, I love driving. So, yeah, I mean, this is ideal. And yes, I'm looking for. I hope I'll pass the Garda vetting. That's the next thing.
Well, you know where to call if you don't. You seem to be on a little bit of a roll now, Ruth. Yeah. In fact, we might turn your attention to the student fees and see what you could go and do in that.
Oh well, yes. I might have a go. I'll see.
Good woman. Ruth's clause, ladies and gentlemen, it would seem now that all insurers in the Irish motor insurance market will allow you to go and volunteer for the Irish Cancer Society's transport service and get to work providing what sounds like, from what Paul is saying, from what Noel is saying, and from what hopefully will be Ruth's experience as well, an incredibly valuable service. Thank you all for talking to us this morning. We're going to take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Hello, Dara, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, hello.
How are you keeping?
Keeping well. I'm very sad about the news this morning, but we're keeping well.
People will know you as Liverpool's most super, super fan. Ryanair will know you as someone not to be messed with, but that's not what I want to talk to you about, as you kind of indicated there. I want to talk to you about Diogo Jota.
Yeah, very, very sad news this morning. I woke up this morning and I checked my Instagram page and I seen this on multiple sources that Jota had passed away. It was very sad news.
And you initially didn't believe it?
No, I opened my Instagram page this morning and I seen it on one post, and I didn't really believe it at first, and then I keep scrolling down and it was everywhere.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe, isn't it?
It's really hard to believe, yes, that an active footballer has passed away. It's very sad, and he'll be remembered forever.
Not just an active footballer, but somebody who you went to see, despite Ryanair's best attempts to keep you in your wheelchair off the planes, you did get over to Liverpool. What happened? Now, you were supposed to meet him, but he was injured.
Yeah, whenever I met Jurgen Klopp, he was doing his rehabilitation.
Do you know what, Dara? I have to say something about you. You do name drops really well. You just put Jurgen Klopp in there completely effortlessly. Well done.
Thank you. When I met Jurgen Klopp a couple of years ago, Diogo Jota was doing his rehabilitation from his ACL injury, and he was doing his rehab on the pitch, doing laps of the pitch, and we got to watch Diogo Jota do that with Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah. How did you find the whole experience of being there?
Yeah, the experience was unbelievable. Just even be there in that training ground is like a different world. And Klopp and the players were so nice. And Klopp is just such an unbelievable man.
Now, you were surrounded by footballing stars, of course. But I kind of get the feeling that Diogo was the one that you wanted to meet.
Yeah, I'd love to meet Diogo. He seemed to be a really nice person, and that he seemed to be really down to earth. And he went really well with the team, and he played very well. And it's just been really nice to meet him.
What's your favourite goal?
My favourite goal would have been the goal he scored against Spurs to win it a couple of years ago. I think it was.
Oh, this is the end of the 23 season.
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal.
3-3. Wasn't it 3-3, and
then he scores.
Gets a pass across the front of the box, and he just slips it effortlessly into the net. And then there was this kind of really very chilled signal to the fans where he said, "Don't worry, I've got this. Don't worry."
Yeah, it's brilliant.
You've all been stressing about losing to Spurs, and it was a pretty consequential goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a brilliant goal, very crucial in our season. That was what kind of boosted us towards the end and kept us believing that we could still do well, and it was a brilliant goal.
There would have been no European football the following year if he hadn't scored that goal.
No.
And yet it's Mo Salah and Sadio Mane who get all of the kudos and all of the credits and all of the glory, but this man was a workhorse that scored some, you know, pretty impactful, significant goals whenever he came on.
Yeah, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah do usually get the credit, but it was Jota that set up some of the goals, and he was a crucial part of Liverpool's squad, and to have him there as well was, and for him to be so crucial, and it was he was such a good player.
And you know what also strikes you whenever you watch any of this stuff back is whenever he scores, before he scores, after he scores, he's always smiling.
Yeah, Jota, he was always a smiling person. He was never a negative person. He was always positive about himself and his teammates and what they could do. And he just kept smiling until he couldn't smile anymore. And he's such a nice person. And
you have this in common with him, you know that. You're somebody who, it strikes me from having seen you on television, you know, knows how to find the joy and enjoy it wherever you can and wherever it exists.
Yeah, life doesn't last forever, so you've got to make the most of it while you can. And Jota was an example of that. And I just like to make the most of a bad situation if I have to, or just be as positive as possible.
You play as him when you play your FIFA computer game?
I play as Liverpool, and Jota would be up to striker, and I do carry modes with Jota as well. And
so, now, are you loyal to him, or do you occasionally play as Mo Salah?
Occasionally as maybe Luis Diaz, but mostly loyal to Jota.
And what else are you doing with yourself and with your time? How are you filling your days?
Well, I'm playing, hopefully I'm going to start playing Powerchair football for DCU in a couple of weeks' time, and I just wanted to thank Shabra for donating me a chair for that. And
is it a special chair?
It's called a Strikeforce chair. It's a faster chair that has like a kind of a platform in the front of it to hit the ball, and hopefully now I can get started on that soon.
Okay. Are these expensive pieces of kit, Dara?
I'm not too sure, actually. The one donated to me by Shabra. Yeah. And
but if you're charging at high speed around an indoor, but if you're charging at high speed, running the risk of colliding into each other, presumably they have to be pretty robust pieces of technology, are they?
They are really robust, yeah. You crash into people a lot.
And how many of you are there involved?
Well, there's four on each team on the pitch at one time, but you can have as many substitutes then as you want.
Okay. And, like, is there a big squad? Is there no shortage of people looking to get involved?
I don't think so, no. I think usually there's four people on the pitch and two on the bench, but it depends really on the squad size.
Okay. What does it mean to you to be able to do this?
Oh, it means a lot to Perthshire football, and just to be able to actually play football and to score goals, hopefully, and it's a real honour.
And do you score?
I hope so. I do get scored a few goals before, but I hope to continue that.
And what is the difference in your mind and your feeling and your mood before playing and after playing?
Well, before playing, it's really to get into the zone and to start concentrating, because if you lose concentration for a second, like, you could slip up one mistake, but afterwards then it's just a joy that I have actually played football.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that there's absolutely nobody fixing any limitations to your life and you're getting out there and doing exactly what you want.
Yeah, thank you.
But a sad day, nonetheless. Let's, you know, just go back to remembering why it is that we're talking this afternoon. That poor man at 28 years of age, and it would appear from just something as simple as a tyre that blew out on the motorway, himself and his brother are not with us any longer. Very, very sad day, and I'm sure we'll all, along with Dara, remember him. Dara, looks, thank you very much for talking to us, and take care of yourself.
No, thank you very much for having me.
All right, good luck.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Gráinne, how are you doing?
Hello, Pete. Philip, how are you? Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about something that you have insight into. Where Kate Middleton was coming from when she was talking just yesterday, out and about in the world, looking fully recovered after her cancer treatment and quite healthy and happy, but saying, no, look, this is actually this kind of, once you're in remission, post-treatment phase, is actually really difficult because you don't have a clinical team in your life any longer. You're not functioning fully normally at home, she was saying, as you once used to. You have to find your way back to a new normal. This resonated with you.
It did, actually. I found her interview very honest, and it resonated with me because I have had cancer 5 times over the past 20 years. And I did find that the most difficult time was actually when everything was, we say, done and dusted. Before that, you have appointments, you feel secure with a team, with an oncology team, you know that you've been looked after and whatever. And then suddenly the euphoria of getting that all clear, and you go along with that for a while, and then suddenly you wake up and think, so what now? What if? What happens? And it's a very lonely place to be. I was even afraid, Philip, to take a shower, to be honest, for fear that I might find another lump. And your whole life just goes into overdrive. Your peace of mind is taken away. And your ability, I suppose, to plan for the future, plan for a holiday or plan for anything, that's gone, because the fear is always there.
So for fear that you might have to suddenly come back home really quickly and see your consultant. You don't want to be too far away from home.
Exactly. Or that you would actually book something, which has happened to me on numerous occasions, and then never get there because you're either in holiday or you're either in hospital, or you're waiting on scan results, or, you know, it's just that fear.
And when you get the lumps and the bumps and the bangs and the bruises and the headaches that are just a part of normal life and indicate absolutely nothing being wrong with you, presumably the imagination goes into overdrive as well.
Oh, absolutely. Like every pain and ache just throws you right back into what if this, what if that, you know, how can I manage this? Is this coming again? And, you know, you really, I suppose, I kind of feel that after each time, in my case, after each time, you do need something to cling on to, or some sort, in my case, of therapy. I had, after my second bout of chemotherapy and cancer return, I did go to the Psychological Medical Services at St. James's, and they were just wonderful.
What did they say to you? What helped?
Well, it's cognitive, really. It's changing your mindset. What helped was, will we sit around waiting for a cancer to return, or will we try and live in the meantime, and if it comes back, deal with it then?
That sounds so logical, but I would also imagine in your position, it's a little bit easier said than done.
Most definitely, like many an hour and years went into trying to even comprehend or master some part of it, just to cope, just to carry on, just to be mammy again, just to be a wife again.
You were right on one level to be feeling this way, because, you know, after the first time that you were successfully treated, there was another four instances of cancer.
Absolutely. Like, we thought the first time, okay, that's it. We've done our bit now, that's it. We had a big celebration with my girls and my husband. We burned, or tried to burn, the wig, and we did all the celebratory things. And then 11 months later, the same bang again. And you're right back where you were. When you're just trying to come back out of something, there it goes again. And right back into the waiting for scans, the nervousness, every time the phone rings, is it the hospital? I carried my phone absolutely everywhere in case I'd miss a call and then couldn't get them back. And I'd miss it and then I'd worry, and it could be Friday and you wait until Monday to get them again. And
And tell me, Gráinne, after the fifth diagnosis and the fifth course of treatment and then the fifth all clear, did you believe them? Was it easy to accept that, oh yes, I've once again got the all clear? Or is the other devil, not angel, on your shoulder saying, no, you're going to be back here again?
I never really, in my case, never really believe in the word all clear. And I suppose I have had, you know, reason to believe in that. What I try to do now is just say I'm in remission, or it's gone for the moment. But I never actually do believe that it's clear.
But this means that you have to hold two different ideas in your head at the same time. The one that, you know, cancer is going to be an ongoing part of my life, but then on the other hand, I have just got to get on with my life as if I don't have to think about cancer. That's quite a feat of mental gymnastics, Gráinne. How do you do that?
It's not easy. And I suppose, you know, your family, your support work around you. My two beautiful grandchildren, I want to say hello to Amelia and Archie.
Hello, Amelia, and hello, Archie.
They're the joys in your day that get you up in the morning and say, right, let's go and get this. But that's the struggle every morning. It really is a morning coping. You know, you could go one way or the other with it, but you've got to keep trying to just keep going.
How important then is it, Gráinne, to just get straight up out of bed in the morning and get on with it rather than lying there ruminating?
Absolutely, very important. I leave out my clothes at night time for what I'm going to wear the next morning. As soon as I wake up, I get directly up. If I was to lie there and think about it and think about things in general, it's a very lonely place to be. So I instantly just get up. And some mornings I have to take it in stages. Some mornings I say, well, okay, at the moment, just brush your teeth. At the moment, just start getting dressed. And the next time, let's just make the bed. And it takes, it takes a process to sometimes just get moving.
Yeah, but once you've done even the first of those tasks, you know that you can do the next task as well, and the one after that, and you can keep on going. And before you know it, you're going to be hanging out with Archie and Amelia again toward
that's
the end
exactly
of their day.
It. Yeah, that's exactly it. And I suppose, you know, over time, like everything, time is a great healer for everything that we have to deal with. It does become easier. Some days not so easy, but some days great. Sometimes I don't have to do it in so many stages, and sometimes I do. And it's just, every day is just another learning curve in how to cope and how to manage it, I suppose.
Well, wouldn't it be awful if every single day was the same as the one before, Gráinne?
Well, it would. It would, because then we'd be on a no-go. You know, it would. So it's great that some days are lighter than others. I'm sure everybody has that. You know, everybody has something in this world to worry about or to think about. And there are lots of times we're all struggling. You know, it may be in different directions, but we're all struggling with different ideas, whether it's family or illness or other things, maybe financial or whatever. Everybody has something to worry about. So it's just a matter of trying to keep coping.
But as you say, and I don't care how trite this sounds, I think that it's absolutely brilliant advice. Get up out of bed, make that bed, and the rest of the day will start to take care of itself one footstep after another.
Absolutely. And sometimes it just is literally one step after another. But that is probably what I learned a lot in the psychological services. That was invaluable.
Good. Well,
to go through that process.
And thank you for reminding us. Left, right, left, right, left, right, one step after another, Gráinne. Take care of yourself and thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much, Philip. It's a pleasure. Thanks very much. Bye.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Hello, Liam. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip.
I'm sure you didn't like doing what you had to do, but it had to be done.
Oh, look, it had to be done, Philip. It was with a heavy heart now last week. I put up the post. Now, physically, still haven't put up the prices. We're given another week. But I suppose anybody knows us, where we are in Cork and what we're about, you know, we're very much community-driven. And I suppose it's 11 years there now, that business. And I suppose we were looking at, you know, the
Mayo Cafe on Pope's Quay, we're talking about, yeah.
Pope's Quay, we're on the north channel of the Lee in Cork City, just under the Shandon Bells. Mm-hmm. And,
So what's happened to prices then?
Oh, look, I mean, over the last year, Philip, it's a monthly thing. We get the letters in the post, so commodity prices are going through the roof. I mean, green coffee beans have doubled in price. Any of the roasters out there know that. The last kind of 6-8 months. And, you know, obviously with oil prices fluctuating as well, that has an effect. But we're looking at all ingredients going up and up and up all the time.
Yeah.
So we have a huge, loyal following customer base, and it will be a broad range of demographics, you know, from the young to the old. And, you know, everybody is struggling with the cost of living. And I have tried to soak up all these price increases for the last year. And it's just got to a point where we have to...
You had to revisit it all. So you held off and you held off and you held off. Tell me now, just indicate one or two. Like, how much has a flat white gone up by?
Well, we were 350 and we're only putting it up to 380, you know, so it's still not a huge increase, and we have a premium coffee. We use an organic coffee that's in there.
In the context of, you're saying, like, you know, the raw commodity having doubled in the course of the last, or say 50%, did you say, in the course of the last year, a 30-cent increase is not that much. And if I want to have a soup and sandwich combo for lunch with you, what are we looking at now?
Well, we were trying to give value at 10.95. That'll go up to 12.50. Which is still very reasonable.
Oh, that's not bad value at all.
No, it's still very reasonable.
€1.55 of an increase. And how have people reacted?
Well, you know, it's been very positive, really. And again, I'm very price conscious in the sense that we want to get people out. The coffee shop is the new hub. It's the new point of contact for a lot of people during their day.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen what's happened with the pubs right across the country. And you know, these were integral parts of a community. This is where people swapped news. They did their complaining. They did their arguing. They did their, you know, their bidding was done in the pub, and now it's changed. So the coffee shop has replaced that. And you just want to make it accessible to all. And again, we're still giving good value. But when people are struggling, though, that 30 cent means a lot. That 150 means a lot. It may mean that on another day in the week that you can't come out and have that cup of coffee or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. But, like, you've also got to stay in business. You must be asking yourself, where does it stop?
Well, I'd be very worried about the Middle East now, and I'd be very worried about the oil prices, because that'll shoot everything up if that reignites there, you know? So I suppose I felt this was the time. And also, you know, staff, I have 7 staff. Everybody is kind of on, above, or very close to the living wage, which anybody that's in business out there knows there's a huge cost to that. PRSI and the taxes and things like that. And you try to keep up to date with all of that. But I suppose, personally, I've never been that driven. In the bottom line, obviously, is important, but I think giving value to people as well is even more important. And I think both from the customer service point of view, but also longevity to the business. If we started jacking up our prices, we'll say if we were just focused on the price, you know, the margin, and we need to keep that margin and keep getting it, it would affect people.
What you're doing is absolutely pragmatic. I can see it's the only solution in this situation, but reading between the lines of listening to you, I get the feeling that you think that you're breaking faith with people.
Well, you know, it was a worry for me, but to be honest with you, we've had a very warm and supportive response from the wider community and all of our regulars as well. They do understand. You know, so we were very much encouraged. We do an awful lot within the community anyway. We do a lot with the arts, and I suppose we do a lot of charity events, and we do a lot of that kind of work, and people appreciate it. So I think people were very supportive. I really warmed my heart last week. Now, you know, people were saying, look, keep going, we'll support you. And I think, again, it's people see that these places are vital for the community spirit, and are willing to support
All right, Liam, thank you very much, and good to see that people reacted positively. No, thank you very much.
Drop in for the tea if you're in Cork.
Gladly do.
There's lovely tables and chairs out by the banks of the Lee there.
Will do, gladly and happily. Mayo Cafe in Postkey, thank you very much, Liam. Good luck to you.